Okay. Good morning. Good morning. Welcome. Okay. We're up to Perek Shlishi, the third Perek, the third chapter of the Maral's Gvuras Hashem. And the Maral here in this Perek is going to be the issue which he's trying to define is the significance of, the gravity of, the event of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Which, of course, is a very loaded question. Right? There's so many ways you can look at that, so many aspects to it. But Maral is going to look at it in a particular way, where he's going to end up, in a certain sense, the structure of the Perek is going to be to pose a question about this by observing different things which we see in Torah and Mitzvah about how we treat Yetzias Mitzrayim, is to formulate the question about the uniqueness of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and then he's going to define the uniqueness of Yetzias Mitzrayim with two aspects based on using a Chazal, using a Medrash, which he's going to elaborate on in sort of his typical fashion. I think it's a significant instructive perek. So let's get to it. The Maral begins and he says, "Bachar hu yisparach b'leil Pesach." Hashem chose the night of Pesach to inform boy olam, to inform the people of the world of his actions. Lahakir shmoi b'olam b'yitzias amim b'mitzrayim, to recognize his name in the world when he took his people out of Mitzrayim. And he says, look, the Torah clearly put remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim, or the event of Yetzias Mitzrayim, as Yesod HaYesodos V'Shoresh HaKol, as the foundation of all foundations and the root of everything. He says, look at all the mitzvahs that we do to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. And he starts with Sukkah, which is actually remembering what happened after we left Mitzrayim. He continues with Shabbos, which in the second set of Dibros, the second set of the Ten Commandments, as opposed to what we read yesterday, it says, so you shall remember that you were slaves in Mitzrayim and I took you out from there. He speaks about, of course, Pesach, the Korban Pesach, Chag HaMatzah. Every Yom Tov, when we say in Kiddush, we say, Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. We have to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim every day, and according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, every day and every night. And he says, and this is the point which he moves to, which is very important. He says, and it's not just the miracles. It's not just the miracles. It's we remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. You know, you could take the same when we remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's shorthand for remembering Dam Tzvardei Akinim Orov Dever Shchin. You know, for remembering all the different plagues, and all those plagues were tremendous demonstration of Hashem's power over nature and Hashem's ability to change things and accomplish things, and demonstrates therefore his mastery over the world. So remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim again is shorthand for remembering all of those nisim v'niflois. But he says it doesn't sound like that. It sounds like we want to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim in a certain sense, even if you will to some degree take the specific miracles or even the cumulative effect of the miracles out of the picture. There's a miracle called Yetzias Mitzrayim. There's a miracle called the fact that Hashem took us out of Egypt. And he even goes so far as to posit, he says, one could make an argument that there were other events in history, in Jewish history, in biblical Jewish history, where the miracles might have even surpassed Yetzias Mitzrayim. I mean, to pick on one which the Maral, we discussed recently in the Maral's second introduction to the Gvuras Hashem, Shemesh beGivon Dom v'Yareach beEmek Ayalon. Right, when in the battle for Eretz Yisrael, in the battle of Yehoshua, he stopped the sun in its tracks. And I mention that because remember that was Maral cited the Ralbag, who said, well, maybe that means just it seemed like time stood still because they were able to finish the battle, in short order. But the Maral said, no, it was a real ness. And that's a ness, you know, which when Yaakov was speaking to Yosef, he said about Ephraim, Zariyeh Malay Agoyim, his children will be the talk of the world, all the nations will marvel about him. Because, you know, when the Nile turns into blood, so the Egyptians are amazed. But when the sun stands still, it's the same sun of the whole wide world, right? So it was the whole world would notice it. So was that miracle not greater than Yetzias Mitzrayim? But you know, there are many Jews who don't even know that that happened. Many Jews who know, who can tell you the 10 Makos backwards and forwards, right, and explain to you exactly how the frogs were jumping everywhere, but they don't even know that this happened. There's no mitzvah of Zecher le Shemesh begivon dom yorech be'emek ha'olam. If there was, the Ralbag would really be in trouble, right? So what's the story? Is it that these specific events, miracles, are so dramatic? No, says the Maral. It's Yetzias Mitzrayim that's dramatic. There's something about the fact that Hashem took us out from being servants, slaves to Paro and Mitzrayim, and removed us from there to freedom, that's what's significant. What's the significance of that? And of course, to close his case in arguing that we have to have an approach to this, so he says, there's a mechilta, a medrash in Parshas Yisrael, a medrash halacha in Parshas Yisrael, that says, on yesterday's parsha, right, it's always neat, always works out this way, Vayishma Yisrael, as kol asher asa, Hashem and Moshe Yisrael Amay Yisrael heard everything that Hashem had done to Moshe and to Yisrael, his people, ki yitzi Hashem as Yisrael mimitzrayim, that he took them out of Mitzrayim. Says the Medrash, Melameh Cheshkuli Yitzias Mitzrayim Neged Kol Hanisim Vagvurais Sh'osa HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael. Yitzias Mitzrayim, the fact that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, is equal in weight and significance to all the miracles that Hashem did for the Jewish people. Now, obviously, the Medrash is not translating it as Hashem heard, he heard of all the miracles that brought about the taking the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, right? Because then that language, I mean, that would be the simple way to read the Pasuk, of course, right? All the miracles that Hashem did to take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, including the Mon and the waters of the Be'er and the waters of Mor and all these things, because, as the Maral says, we say those things are remembering what happened to Yetzias Mitzrayim. But no, then you don't say, this is equal to that. This includes all of that. No. The fact that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim is in itself a great miracle. Is in itself was such a significant event, such a transformative event, besides for the tricks which Hashem, so to speak, played and imposed on nature. What is it? What's the ness of Yetzias Mitzrayim itself? What's the significance of Yetzias Mitzrayim itself? Okay, so that's the issue which the Maral poses, which the Maral wants to explain here. Got it? Okay, clear?
Not the global, but just the specific. Not the whole story. That specific
easier. Well, I guess it would be a question of semantics. Yeah. I would almost I hear it the way you're formulating it.
Okay.
I would hear somebody else formulating it, not the specifics, but the globe, but the global. In other words, not the specifics of this. He did this and he did that and he did the other thing, but he took us out of Mitzrayim, the liberation of the Jewish people. ברוך אתה אדוני אלוהינו מלך העולם שהכל נהיה בדברו. So the Maral, in order to explain this, uses as his text a medrash. It's a famous medrash. He quotes it from the Medrash Shachar Tov, which is the Medrash of Tehillim, and the Medrash says this, cites there the pasuk, which it says in Chumash, "Vayetzi aschem mikur haBarzel miMitzrayim." Hashem took you out from the Kur HaBarzel, from the iron furnace, the furnace that smelts the iron, took you out from there. And the Medrash also analyzes or uses another pasuk, which says, "Ehanisa Elokim Lavoi Lokachas Legoy Mikerev Goy," or has a God ever gone to take one nation out from the midst of another nation? From inside another nation. So the Medrash draws a double metaphor. Says the Medrash, "Vayetzi aschem mikur haBarzel, k'shem shahazahavi." Just like the Zahavi is the goldsmith, Poshet Yodoi V'Noitel Hazav Min Akur. He extends his hand and pulls the gold out of that furnace. Kach Chaytzi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Es Yisrael Mimitzrayim. So too Hashem took the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. As a note, which he's going to make a point of later, the Maral a little bit later cites a version of the Medrash which says that the Zavi literally reaches his hand inside, not with a pair of tongs, not with a smartut, not even with his hand wrapped, but he puts his hand in to pull out the gold. Don't try this at home. Uku'ubar shehu nasun v'seich me'eha shel behema. And the second metaphor is like a ubar, like a fetus that's inside the innards of an animal. V'haraya naisen yada, and the shepherd reaches his hand, v'shaimtai, and loosens it, and brings it out. Kach hanisoy lekim lavoy lekachas legoimi keregoy. So too, has it ever happened such a thing that God would come and take one nation out from the midst of another nation? So it's a double metaphor. On the one hand, we're comparing the extraction of the Jewish people from Mitzrayim to the gold being pulled out of the furnace, out of the smelting furnace, the purifying furnace. And on the other, we're comparing it to the birth of a child, to the removal of the fetus from its mother's womb. What's the double metaphor? So says the Maral, what the Medrash is saying here by these two metaphors is it's highlighting two aspects that made Yetzias Mitzrayim so significant. One of them is the aspect of Mitzrayim, and the other is the aspect of Yisrael. One of them is the aspect of the power of the Egyptians as a barrier to taking the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, and the second is the fragility of the Jewish people and taking them out and strengthening them. Avodim hayinu lepare de Mitzrayim. That's the shorthand of the story. We were slaves to Paro in Mitzrayim, and Hashem took us out from there. So the Maral actually says this, and he notes it here that he says, "You go look at what I say when you get up to that point of the Haggadah." Those four words, "We were slaves to Paro in Mitzrayim," expresses that duality. On the one hand, we were slaves, which is an expression of how low we were, and Leparo b'Mitzrayim, to Paro in Mitzrayim, speaks about the power of the force that was above us. So both of these things are recognized as issues. And the way the Medrash presents it, the two metaphors represent these, you know, both sides of this issue. The gold may be fine, you know, it's sitting there. In fact, it might even be better than ever, except there's this burning hot furnace. The fires of the furnace are the impediment to the Zahavi, to any normal person who's not, I guess, properly, very carefully trained, being able to go and actually pull the gold out from inside. It's the force around it. It's not the problem of the gold itself. It's the heat, the fire that's around it that gets in the way. Whereas by the fetus, the bigger issue isn't the mother around it. The bigger issue is this child ready? Is this child primed? Right? This child, till this point, certainly was not ready to come out. Now is the beginning of possibility of the child being able to come out. So that's the duality, that's the double metaphor. And both of these things are significant when it comes to Yetzias Mitzrayim. But that's just the beginning. That's just the framework. What's the real idea here? So the Maral explains this by speaking about the two aspects, which we've learned about B'Toras HaMaral, I don't want to say innumerable times, because that would be an exaggeration, but I don't know how many times. It was a lot. Right? And that is the duality of Chaymer and Tzura. Chaymer and Tzura. Chaymer is matter and Tzura is form. Right? The terms chaimer and tzura are terms which were used by the Rishayim, by the philosophers, greatly. And you know, in the simple sense, to picture this duality of chaimer and tzura, we imagine a ball of clay that we have sitting here on the table. The ball of clay is chaimer; it's raw matter. The chiddush, of course, as we know of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creation, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates that matter, right? From nothing becomes the matter. The matter comes into existence, but it's a ball of clay. And then the question is, what are you going to make it into? Are you going to make it into a bowl? Are you going to make it into a teacup? Are you going to make it into a flower? Are you going to make it into a fire engine? You know, what are you doing? How are you going to structure? What shape, what form are you going to give to the chaimer, to the raw matter? Usually, when we speak about human creation, so it's all a matter of applying tzura to existing chaimer, because there's a law of the conservation of matter. Matter doesn't come into existence in this world. It exists, it just changes form. Again, the chiddush of the word Bereshis, Bara Elohim, of the Pasuk, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the matter, and then from creation he went on to be Yotzer and Osa, to form it and to finish it. When we speak about the issues faced, so to speak, by Klal Yisrael, so there are the issues of Chaimer here we speak about, and there are the issues of Tzura. One of the ideas where we discussed this before, if you may recall, is that in the Tiferes, the Maharal spoke about it numerous times, is the idea of Klal Yisrael, in a certain sense, supposed to be being positioned to be the ultimate nation of Tzura. The ultimate nation of Tzura. Why? Because Tzura, form, structure, direction, defines exactly what something is supposed to look like, what its purpose is, how it gets there. And if the Jewish people are the Segula Mikol HaAmim that we read about yesterday, if we're the chosen people and HaKadosh Baruch Hu focuses all of his creation around us, with the Jewish people being the centerpiece of the Bria, the centerpiece of creation, so we're really supposed to set the agenda and set the direction. We understand what it's all for. We understand what it's all about. And we're supposed to, in providing the light for the nations, we're supposed to help them understand the direction. We're supposed to help them to be able to guide their activities and to guide where they are going. Klal Yisrael is supposed to be the tzura, provide the tzura for the world. What's an example, or what's an illustration of something which is the exact opposite of those that would provide the tzura for the world? One which would not set any agenda, which would have no structure whatsoever, which would be considered as something that's completely malleable. Right? Chomer par excellence, right? Chomer, again, the raw matter without anything else. The human ball of clay. That's an evet. A slave is a human ball of clay. Because an Eved, a slave, doesn't have the power, the autonomy, to set for himself any kind of direction, to structure his life, to set a mission, to set goals. His goals are immaterial. Somebody else defines his goals. His master decides this morning, I want you to cut diamonds, and the next day he decides, I want you to haul trash. Well, one second, isn't there a program where I get to go to college at night and, you know, get a second degree? No, you don't. You do whatever I say, whatever I tell you. You have no goals for yourself. You're all there, completely owned by the master, subsumed under the master. Whatever the master says goes. That's Avdus, that's the Eved. That's when we speak about even when we speak about the Maharal writes about this, we will come across it, if I remember correctly, in one of the later prakim here of the Gvuras, where it's going to describe Moshe Rabbeinu going down to Mitzrayim and taking his family and riding them on the chamor, on the donkey. A chamor, the letters that spell chamor, donkey, are the same letters that spell chomer. And so the chamor, in a certain sense, the donkey, is the prototype of chomer. In the sense that, you know, if you see a horse, you know, sometimes you can say, wow, you know, like the horse is sort of like this beautiful, galloping, you know, majestic thing. Nobody ever makes that mistake about a donkey, right? I mean, have you ever seen a majestic donkey? Right? You know, right? A donkey is a schlepper. Right, a donkey, you know, you put something on top of it, and okay, whatever it's supposed to carry, that's what it is. There's nothing, just again, maybe this is being sort of, you know, stereotyping or caricaturing or whatever you want to call it, but yes, that is the stereotype, the caricature of the chamor. And when we speak about someone riding on the chamor, we speak about the idea of the person taking control of the chomer, instead of just being this blob of clay, this unformed, undefined, undeveloped thing, you're supposed to try to take charge of it. But Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim were avodim. We were slaves. And if we're slaves, then we had no shape. We had the shape that the Egyptians imposed upon us. And when we speak about an ubar bimei imai, when you speak about a fetus being formed and developing, so as long as it's there and it's eichel mashe ima eichel, as Chazal describe it just eats what its mother eats. In other words, it has really no independence for itself. It's just completely an appendage. It's yerech ima, it's like just the thigh, just a part of the body of the mother. That's the depiction of something which can only be taken and directed by something else. Chomer complete. Chomer complete. And Yitzias Mitzrayim was the point where the Chomer is now graduated to being able, to a certain sense, to develop on its own. To be able to become something of its own. So the underdeveloped Bnei Yisrael would now, with Yitzias Mitzrayim, Goymi Kerev Goy, like the fetus extracted from the mother, come out of this. The Maharal says, just as a little diuk, a nakuda, a point, in order to support this idea, he says, look what Chazal said. I mean, we're talking here about a whole nation of people. A whole nation of people, I mean, 600,000 people. And what's the metaphor which Chazal say? A shepherd reaching in to help birth an animal. Why doesn't it say midwife reaching in to birth a child? Why does it choose that as the metaphor? And says the Maharal, because that supports the way he's proposing to see what Chazal are saying in this aspect of the Medrash. Because the issue was Klal Yisrael as being chaymer, as being undeveloped. So therefore, it's more nimshal kabeimais nidmu. It's more like the animal that's, you know, just really there to be underneath something else. So that's why it chooses that aspect, that picture for the metaphor. But that's one part. That's the part called avodim hayinu. Avodim hayinu. We were avodim. We were avodim. We had no direction of our own. We had no structure of our own. That's the part which Hashem told Avram Avinu in the Bris Bein Abesorim, in the promise where he told him about that the Jewish people would be in Mitzrayim only to be redeemed from Mitzrayim, where he said, Vavodum, and they will enslave them. It's not like the Jewish people never had form. Understand, this is not like, in a certain sense, it's not like the fetus that starts off as, you know, chves, a drop, a putrid drop, and so on and so forth. The Jewish people went down to Mitzrayim where the Shivim Nefesh of Yaakov Uvanov, but we were crushed. We were crushed by the Avdus, so that we became, in a certain sense, a formless and shapeless. And taking us out, Klal Yisrael had to start again. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to start us again by taking us out and giving us Tzura. That's Vavodim. That's what the Maharal sees in his Pirush on the Haggadah, which he references here to take a look at, where it says Avodim Hayinu Lefara B'Mitzrayim Ve'etzeinu Hashem Alekeinu Misham B'yod Chazoko V'Izrayim Etzui. Hashem took us out there with a strong hand and an outstretched arm. So he associates the Yod Chazoka, the strong hand, with that which was necessary in order to generate the Jewish people from this avdus, from this shapelessness, to make us into something that was Ness one. It required the Yod Chazaka. Yeah.
This might not be the place for this question, I'm not sure, but I mean, certainly the way he's presenting it makes it seem like what was going on was that, you know, Kai, so clearly, as everybody just said, had a shape beforehand. But it sounds like that shape was, even though we would assume it was great, it sounds like that shape was all wrong. Because the only reason that you would take the shape and say, I don't like this, let's do this all over again and start it from scratch, is if you don't like what you had before.
It may be. There's a point here which the Maral discusses, and he discusses it at some length, which may be a different way to view it. The way the Maral describes the Klal Yisrael becoming something themselves, he associates strongly with the Shishim Ribay, with the 600,000 Jews who left Mitzrayim. The 600,000 is a magic number, says the Maral. It's the magic number of the Shleimus, of the wholeness. If a fetus is complete, you know, based on, you know, everything developing, you know, the lungs developing to the right level and so on and so forth, and then it's ready to come out, as a people, as a nation, the maturity, the physical maturity of Klal Yisrael, says the Maral, was reaching the stage of being that magic number of the Shishim Ribo, of the 600,000. And Maral just demonstrates it very simply by saying that when you look at all the different times there was a census of Klal Yisrael, whether when we left Mitzrayim, whether after the Masa Egel, whether in the Midbar, you know, beginning and end, there's always 600,000 and change. Right? 600,000 and change. But Shishim Ribay is the magic number. It's the number of Shleimus. And as the Maral explains, using his familiar, you know, somewhat familiar system of looking at numbers, he says something which is a dot is not complete, and something which is a line is not complete, and something which is even, you know, a picture or something like that that's four-dimensional, you know, up and down, is also not, I say four-dimensional, we call it two-dimensional, right? But the Maral, in his terminology, speaks about four-dimensional because four-dimensional. Length, four-polar, four-directional, very good, or four-polar. Is from here to here and from up and down, but completeness, something real and full in the world, is something which is three dimensional and six directional, polar, whatever you want to call it, which has length and width and depth. A real item in the world is three dimensional, and three again in the Maral's formulation always is six, and therefore Klal Yisrael, to reach their shleimus, it needed to be the six. And the six is not just six, but it has to be 600,000. Right? This sort of like graduated fullness that would exist in the world. Now, it's an interesting thing, and this is the kind of like the area of the Maral where I always like pose to you these questions, which I can't answer because I don't understand. But when we speak about the Jewish people coming down to Mitzrayim, we also spoke about completeness. And it was what? It was the 70. Because seven is also a number of completeness, which includes the essence, what's supposed to, right? The six dimensions are the box, but what's inside the box, the way the Maral always explains, is the seventh. That's the Shleimus of Kedusha. That's the Shleimus of Shabbos Kedush. So if somebody would have, if I never learned a Pasuk in the Chumash about the number of Jews who went out of Mitzrayim, and somebody would say, there were X 100,000 Jews who went out of Mitzrayim, fill in the blank. Right? 5, 6, 7, 8. What do you say? I probably would have guessed 7. I probably would have guessed. I mean, I don't know. Maybe this is too theoretical. But 70 graduates to 700,000. I can't explain why the Maharal doesn't say it that way. I can't explain this, you know, this gap. But there is a shleimus, a physical shleimus, which he describes as 600,000. And so he says, you know, as long when something is shalem, it means you don't have to bring anything more into the picture. It's got it all there. It's got it all there. So it required Klal Yisrael to have it all there together, to be goyachad ba'aretz, to be one, to be complete, in order to be able to reach that stage. So when you say that there was something wrong with the Bnei Yisrael, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to break them down and start again, yes, you know, the Gemara says there were certain things that needed tikkun in order for the Jewish people, and which is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu made Gzeiras HaGolus, that there should be a decree that the Jewish people should be in Golus. But there's also something that we have to see here that, you know, as is said, and sometimes to a point of being trite, that the Jewish nation was born in Mitzrayim. We came out as the Shishim Ribo, as the Am. Shishim Ribo is not a shear for a Jew. It's a shear for the Jewish nation. It's a shear for the Jewish nation. And that, you know, before that we were nothing of a nation, right? The Abdus is the subordination, and then we come out with something as such. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, that's what I'm going to say or ask about. In that sense, there was no Tzura. I don't know if the family is usually called an Am, but it was Karo versus Kabbalah being an Am, but that's sort of the same. And in that sense, I see why I thought it was poor, but the 600,000 is only the men. But if you're talking about a nation, you know, that's the what you're looking at in terms of the Chinese, like, 70
wasn't just men.
So that could have some...
It was mostly Ruba was men. Yeah.
And also maybe that was a shlemus, but coming out, it was like a fetus, or like, you know, we didn't have far yet. So maybe that's the six, as opposed to really shlemus, like,
but it would continue to be the number of the Jewish people even after Matan Torah. That's why it would continue to be the number even after the Torah was given. So you have to deal with it.
Maharal saying that Yetzias Mitzrayim takes us from being Homer to the point where we're just Homer for Hashem, or is it Homer and then we somehow have been given a Torah? I'm not quite sure what the progression is.
We do end up being, in a certain sense, chaymer for Hashem, mm-hmm. Right? We go from being avdei pare to being avdei Hashem, but there's always this implicit understanding, this given of ein lecha ben chayrin ela mishayisik b'tayra, that when the tzura is a tzura which is given by Hashem, that is a self-fulfilling tzura. That's what gives meaning. When I'm a slave to somebody else, then that doesn't do anything for me. But when I'm a slave to the one who gives life and whose purpose isn't self-serving, Hashem created the world in order to give us. The master doesn't take the slave in order to give the slave. The master takes the slave in order to give himself. Mm-hmm. So that means it becomes our tzura. It's not a tzura which is just imposed upon us from the outside that's not us. It becomes our tzura. Hashem is giving us the tzura, but he's giving us the chayrus that's there in the tzura. So it's qualitatively different.
So we as B'nai Yisrael have the ability to create our own tzura through the tzura.
By accepting the divine tzura, that divine tzura becomes our tzura. And then our tzura we come and try to bring to those around us.
The issue too that, you know, part of it is the Jewish people being extracted from Egypt, but later it's Egypt being extracted from the Jewish people. I mean, many of our faults in the desert,
yes,
were the bad habits we learned in Egypt.
Correct. So it's all part of this. Mm-hmm. It's all part of this. New things that have to, you know, in that independence, in that disengagement. The second side of this is the Kura Barzel. And the Kura Barzel, the Maharal himself notes, and, you know, this is just again a little, it's the nuance of the Mashal. Just like in the case of the birth, the nuance in the Mashal right? The essence of the mashal was that the child isn't ready until it's time to get born. It's because the child is just still chaymer, has no independence of its own, right? And then it's ready to come out. The nuance was that he used it a behema fetus as opposed to a human fetus. Here, the core of the mashal is that the fire stands in the way of being able to take out the gold. There's something which is just this overwhelming force, this overwhelming energy, this overwhelming power that just stops you from getting at the gold, which represents the Egyptians, a problem from them as opposed to us. The nuance of the mashal, you might say, Kura Barzel, what would you expect to have in there? Barzel. You know, like, well, if it's an iron smelting furnace, why don't we speak about a person who's an ironsmith, right? Instead of a goldsmith. But gold, in the Maral's picture of things, gold represents the ultimate of tzura. Because if the idea of tzura is, you know, the structure of something and the appearance of something and the beauty of something, well, gold stands out as that, you know, par excellence. Okay, so let's take that again, sort of as the counterpoint to behema.
But the iron gold melt. When iron doesn't, that's a much lower melting point. They actually do melt it in a crucible of iron.
Okay. Okay. The in other words, the container is iron. The container is iron. It's not there to smelt iron. The iron itself, the iron is the container rather than something to process iron. Okay, no, that's very good. That's
they didn't have the technology in the Nakad. They had the inside, they didn't have technology for smelting iron at that point.
Really? Okay, very interesting. Okay. The second aspect, though, here is the power of the Mitzrim. And this is the power of the fight for Tzura. Because, you know, when Tzura meets Chaimer, that's not such a hard thing. You know, when the person's hands want to fashion the ball of clay, it's not a big deal. However, if you take a ball of clay, for example, that was already formed and fixed, you know, baked, you know, glazed and baked, you're going to try to reform that. You know, forget about it. You know, you're going to have to smash it to pieces. How do you to get it back? Tzura is really the great arena of conflict, where tzura meets tzura, where one form is trying to triumph over another. And while here we are and we speak about Klal Yisrael being the ultimate tzura, trying to leave their imprint and give their shape to the world, there were other people who wanted to do the same thing. And Mitzrayim, of course, is a great example of that. The power of Mitzrayim and of the civilization of Mitzrayim, all those pictures which Chazal draw, even including Rashi in yesterday's Parsha, Ki Yetzi Hashem es Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, there was never a slave who left Mitzrayim. What does that mean? It means that they had fantastic alarm systems, great guards at the doors. The idea was that Mitzrayim was such an overwhelmingly powerful image, direction, civilization, that when you got into Mitzrayim, you know, you didn't go anyplace else. You didn't think anyplace else. It was an imposing outlook, way, you know, all of whatever, you know, terms you want to use. And that was in tremendous conflict with what Yisrael was supposed to be. It's not on line three, so it's not, I assume that. Okay, whatever it is. So the way the Maharal says it in shorthand is that's inuism. Inui is not, avdus is slavery. Inui, you know, we use that term sometimes, affliction, torture, to humble someone, right? To make them into an ani. right? Where there's a conflict between two who are trying to be the agenda setters, two who are struggling for dominance, as each one has its way and what it wants to do and how it wants to bring forth. That was a fundamental conflict. Look at the first words of Shibud Mitzrayim. Hine am b'nei Yisrael rav atzum imenu hava nischak molei pen yirbe v'hoya ki sikrena mulchama v'noisav gamu al soineinu v'nilcham banu v'olu min ha'aretz. So what are they worried about? They're saying, Kol Yisrael, they're growing. They're becoming a more significant force here. They could take over, right? They could take over to the point to some degree where we would have to leave. And there, that's the struggle with Mitzrayim's real image of itself and Mitzrayim's own strength. And that's the Kur HaBarzel, that's the fire that stands in the way of trying to pull out your gold. The fire directs, the fire dominates, and you're trying to take out the gold to have your own image. That's the trick. That's the way Mitzrayim stands on top. That's the way Mitzrayim stands in the way. And I hope I interpret it and read it correctly. But again, going to how the Maharal says it, so again, the first part is the lack of readiness of the Bnei Yisrael is Avodim Hayinu. And the other part is Lefarei B'Mitzrayim. My Parei Mitzrayim has these powerful opposing forces, these powerful tsuros that compete for setting the structure and the tone of the Bnei Yisrael. So, like we explained before, the Maharal says Yod Chazaka is strong hand has to build the chaimer, but Zeraya Netuya, again, if I read the Maharal correctly, it's almost like a block, right? When you extend your arm, what are you sort of doing? You're like fending off. You're holding up. There's this big power of Mitzrayim, and you're like holding them off so you can do your thing down here. And that's the kunst, that's the trick of what Klal Yisrael had to deal with in order to be able to become this way. And he says beautifully. He says that's why when it speaks about the Kur HaBarzel, it says the pasuk continues. It says Li Yisloi La'am Nachala. He took him out from the Kur HaBarzel, from this iron smelting furnace, to be for him for an Am Nachala, to be for him for his portion, right? Which is a much more dramatic characterization, or full, I shouldn't say dramatic, but a much fuller characterization than saying L'kachas le'goy mikerev goy, right? One nation from the midst of another nation. There it's almost, even equating. Oh, now we should answer. maybe I have to call it on the cell phone or something. I don't know. It's where I should call it. So he says to be for him for the Am Nachala is again this description here. Just let me find the where he describes. Yes, he says Ki mitzad atzura shelahem hayu Yisrael la'am nachala, and because of their tzura the Jewish people became an Am Nachala. An Am Nachala is Hashem's portion, right? That's the idea, fend off the Egyptians to become an Am Nachala. Whereas when it speaks about Goy Mikerev Goy, right, there's an equation in a sense between Yisrael and Mitzrayim. Between Yisrael and Mitzrayim, there it's not a struggle for the form; it's a struggle in the greatest sense for being. This is him.
Yeah.
Hello. Okay, good. Okay, good morning. Okay, so whereas Goy Mikerev Goy is just simply speaking of them as a Goy, as a nation, which is that development of the basic structure of Shishim Ribay that had to do it. So says the Maharal, this is the irony. Mitzrayim was dealing with Klal Yisrael, both, or the significance of Yitzias Mitzrayim, the issue of Yitzias Mitzrayim was both dealing with the significance of Yisrael and the weakness of Yisrael. in dealing with the battle of the tsuros, the battle of the direction, the battle of the structure of the form, that's Mitzrayim worrying about the strength of the Jewish people and trying to overcome the strength of the Jewish people. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to beat back, push back, fend off Mitzrayim so that the strength of the Jewish people would be able to come through. And then, on the other hand, you have the weakness of the Jewish people, that fetus that's not yet ready to come out, that avadim, that were chaymer. So both of these things are together. Klal hadavar, ki mitzad ha-pochol shebi Yisrael v'inyin chumri ha-Yisrael avadim l'paru mitzad atzmam. He says, when Israel had their own problem, like this chaymer thing, this underdeveloped nature of the Jewish people, is its own problem. The fetus is not imprisoned by its mother. It just simply isn't ready to come out. It's not developed enough to come out. That was part of what happened to the Bnei Yisrael in this process. Umitzara choshuv shabahem, but also on their significant side, shu'inin atzura hayu amitzim sholtim aleim b'kayach u'paylim bahem. But the Egyptians were also beating down whatever strength we had, whatever structure, whatever internal tzura we would have for ourselves. The Mitzrayim opposed that and were trying to beat that down and control that. And so those are the two aspects. That's the Goy Miker of Goy. That's the Kurat Mi Le'etzias Chamikura Barzel Mi Mitzrayim. And concludes the Maral that duality is expressed as well in the Hallel of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Beremes, in a hint, B'tzeis Yisrael Mi Mitzrayim Beis Yaakov Me'am Lo Yehis. We know that Klal Yisrael is referred to as Yisrael and as Yaakov. Yisrael is the name of majesty, of strength, of dominance. Sarisa, right, is the term of being masterful, being in control. And then there's Yaakov, which is the name of being the bottom, right, the heel, the lower point. There was a Yetziah of Yisrael, and there was a Yetziah of Yaakov. B'teis Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, and b'teis Yaakov mi Amlois. There was a lowliness which the Jewish people had for themselves, for which they weren't ready, and Amlois is almost generic, right? It doesn't matter who they're against, right? They were there in a strange land. On the other hand, there's also Yisrael, the power of Yisrael, which had to be extracted specifically from Mitzrayim, which was this other powerful civilization that threatened, that which was trying to overtake them. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to do them both. So says the Maral, you want to know the significance of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the transformation, the ability to create a nation generally in such an environment, to create a goy mikerev goy, to create a goy mikerev goy. Usually you would say that, you know, the way it works with nations is not the way it works with fetuses and mothers. And mothers have inside them the equipment to create another life that's supposed to then grow up, develop, and go off on its own and be an independent human being. Do nations have that kind of a reproductive mechanism within themselves, that they're supposed to build up groups within themselves, that they're supposed to go off and create something and become something else? The opposite. Right? The power of a nation when things grow up within it is to even assimilate things which came from elsewhere, that they come into that nation. The fact that Klal Yisrael didn't grow up on some desert island, on some abandoned country someplace where HaKadosh Baruch Hu put them to reproduce and reproduce till they came to the magic number 600,000. But the idea that Klal Yisrael would develop as a fetus when there was no womb, develop as a fetus when it's in Mitzrayim, wow, that's a huge ness. That's a huge miracle. And the idea that it could happen in Mitzrayim, which is such a powerful controlling structure, which is such a dominant civilization, that it would happen there is also a huge, huge chiddush. That even though the Jewish people did go in, they went in sort of as an independent entity, But Mitzrayim was threatened by it, and Mitzrayim tried to quash it, and that Klal Yisrael was able to survive that. That's a ness. It's not a dramatic ness of the kind of frogs here, frogs there, frogs jumping everywhere. It's not a ness of shinui of, you know, teva that makes for good film footage. But it's a ness. It's a tremendous existential ness. I don't know if that's a correct way to say it. But it's a miracle of transformation for Klal Yisrael. And so says the Maral. The ness of the birth of Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim eclipses, or it's shokul keneged, as the Mechilta says, it's equal to all those other fancy miracles that we tell the story of. Yeah. B'tzeis Yisrael Mitzrayim B'tzeis Yaakov Me'av. Questions, comments?
Yeah, irony is that not for Yosef, Mitzrayim wouldn't even be that imposing a force in the world.
He retained their strength. He enhanced their strength. You mean also because of all the economic gain which he brought to them? Not just that they would have been brought to their knees from what they were before. They were significant before. But you're saying Yosef made them even more powerful. True. Yeah?
We see the development of Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim and the base of it. If we were on the 49th level of the Torah, when we read, you know, that, I mean, we see that we weren't hollow the other hollow the other. Sorry, we see. I mean, it's, I think we, yeah, I get the feeling that when we're leaving, it's just like we got to get out of there because we're not.
You know, there's always a paradoxical explanation of what happens with Klal Yisrael when they left Mitzrayim. You have the notion of the Memtah Shari Tuma. You know, where Klal Yisrael was there, they were on the brink of spiritual extinction in a certain sense. Had they stayed one more moment, you know, they wouldn't have been able to make it. And they're standing at the Yam Suf, and the Malachim say, you know, we can't tell the difference. These are idol worshippers, they're idol worshippers. Right? Manishtanu elu me'elu, why are these different than those? That's one aspect. But there's another aspect. Another aspect of the Halalu Maminim B'nei Maminim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu reprimands Moshe Rabbeinu for even suggesting that the Jewish people wouldn't believe him right away. And there's a certain degree of coding which made the Jewish people in a certain sense not recognizable from the Egyptians. But there's also a core difference that was also in place which helped. Which was Vayisak Bnei Yisrael Hashem. They were Bnei Avram. We are Bnei Avram Yisrael Yaakov, and that's an internal difference that you know, you'll find Chazal speaking of both. The Shibud was real. There was a Shibud Ruchni. There was also a spiritual bondage. We weren't the same, but we weren't the same as the Mitzrayim. Yeah.
Image of the Kor Barzal.
Yeah.
I thought it was that since Abraham there was some flaws and the Kor Barzal was like so the dross was, you know, that's definitely a
part of that image. It's there to smell, to remove the chaff and so on and so forth. Definitely a significant part of the image. So it doesn't make it easier to pull the gold out though.
So Egypt is the heat, like that, and it was the conflict of the tourists. I always assumed that I thought it was a baby from a person, and it was from an animal, that the animal was a triumph, and the baby was exhausted. Maybe that's not necessarily the image, it's just the term is like taking.
The mother animal is Mitzrayim, and the baby animal is us. In that metaphor.
Because that makes it stronger that we were somehow coming from inheriting something from Mitzrayim. But if it's just an animal, then you lose it.
Why do you lose it? A baby animal also gets from its mother. Not a last name. Okay. Very good. Hakutavach.
Thank you.
Hakutavach, Eric. there.
Yeah, I'm here. Good luck. I just had you on for you. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Good luck. Good luck next year.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right. Take care. Bye.
It's still true today. That the pendulum is still there, the core inside. And sometimes after two, three generations, it pops back out.
No, that's
in the
done.
You
want some?
Nice lawyer. What's
that?
That's the lawyer.
No, that would be almost a term of diet. It would be almost embarrassing.
It looks like it was much earlier. There's a fascinating book, I think, Kerensky's case, called the glass blowers. Glass technology was in Akkad. Who's had it? The Egyptians. The historians claim so, they didn't have the pyrotechnology for it. And centuries later, Venice, the people with the monopoly on the glass and
the princes,
the princes were Jews. There's an Arab phrase.
Very interesting.
I should have brought that.